Today we're celebrating Thanksgiving with a sampling of some of the leaders who have been honored over the years with the Interfaith Alliance Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Award, which dates back to 1998. Celebrity is a platform for doing good in this country. And perhaps, because not all celebrities take advantage of that opportunity, those who do are especially deserving of recognition. Over the years, George Clooney, Peter Jennings, Larry King, Jim Lehrer, Bill and Judith Moyers were among our honorees. And yes, many of them are journalists. People who, like Walter Cronkite, had to face the special challenge of navigating the fine line between objectivity and abdicating responsibility. Now, two more journalists who received the award devoted their extraordinary talents to work that did much to advance the cause of faith and freedom for all. In 2007, Interfaith Alliance honored Sally Quinn and John Meacham. Together, they helped bring responsible discussion of religion to prominence in our nation's capital, launching the Washington Post's On Faith section. I was a part of that initiative, and it was terrifically helpful to all kind of people who were interested in religion. I have to tell you that John Meacham did one of the best interviews that I ever remember doing. It was in connection with his book, American Gospel. And as you know, John has gone on to write other very, very popular pieces that teach us more about our nation and the kinds of values that make it strong.
I think the idea that we were founded as a Christian nation is the most persistent myth, because I think many people on the religious right believe that we were founded as a Christian nation, that we have fallen from those pure origins, and that the point of political action is to get back to that Edenic state. If we could recover the spirit and sense of the Christian founding of the country, then would our moral life be more coherent? Things would be well. It's an appealing myth, and like many myths, it's full of holes. Historically, there is quite the opposite of there being evidence for this being a Christian nation. There's evidence to the contrary. George Washington, in 1790, in his first 4 years president, wrote a letter to the Hebrew congregation at Newport, Rhode Island, saying that the government of the United States shall give to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance. And then, borrowing an image from Micah, he said, "Every man should sit under his vine and fig tree, and none shall make him afraid." We passed a treaty in 1797 with the Muslim nation of Tripoli, in which we said that the government of the United States is in no sense founded on the Christian religion. The only mention of religion in the Constitution is to ban test oaths, so that your civil rights were not part of any religious profession of belief. Theologically, as you know, you can't have a Christian nation. Just using the Christian scriptures, Jesus said to Pilate, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were of this world, then would my servants fight." And so I think that is the Christian nation myth is the most persistent. I think if we can talk to people who believe that on both historical and theological grounds and convince them that it's not the case, then I think to some extent this the volume could come down a bit.
You conclude in your book that preserving American freedom is the most demanding of tasks, requires unrelenting work and a resilient spirit. If you're doing that work, what are the top two or three items on your agenda?
Religious liberty is often called our first liberty. It's the first liberty in the First Amendment. And it's not just about what you do on Sunday morning. Or it's not about somebody frog marching you down to a certain church. It's about liberty of thought. It's about how you think. It's about democracy. It's about how we can live and work together without coercion. And so I think the first thing to do is to ensure religious liberty, ensure freedom of conscience, make sure that church and state stay separate, but to respect that religion and politics can't be separated. And so, you know, if you're watching Meet the Press, if you're watching C-SPAN, if you're listening and you're following a debate and a person says, well, we have to do X for a religious reason, don't go crazy. Don't pound the person. Don't think, oh, my God, that's some crazy Christer. It may be. That person may be all those things. But they have a right to make this case. And you have a right to make the opposite case on whatever grounds you want. And the point of America, the point of the Republican system, lowercase r, as laid out in Federalist 10, is that all of us will go into the arena, we will let the contending forces bump up against each other, and through a system of checks and balances, we'll reach some temporary solution to something that'll get us through one storm until the next storm comes. Democracy is a completely unfinished work.
In 2010, when issues of faith and freedom were far from the mainstream media's front burner, we honored television host Rachel Maddow for her outstanding work despite the inherent risks of being both branded anti-religious by the right and alienating her progressive MSNBC audience, all too frequently stereotyped as disinterested in matters of faith. I have to tell you, it was a chore to get Rachel to do this, because Rachel does not do her work for reward. She does it because she's carrying out what she thinks is her responsibility in the nation, and she does it well. But finally, I said, Rachel, I think you have a responsibility to take this award. And after 2 years, she said, okay, I will do it.
I feel like we are a very religious country. And regardless of what anyone's individual personal religious beliefs are, you can't understand America or American politics without understanding religion and how it drives us in so many different ways, and how much of our constitutional heritage and what is unique and important about the way the founding fathers set this country up for us, and the reason we're still around this many centuries later, has to do with understanding of and appreciation for the importance of religion. So how can you not want to talk about it? I think that liberals in particular have a shyness around the issue that's born from the right place. It's born out of respect for the privacy of the issue. But it means that we don't fully participate, I think, in the national discussion about religion in a way that we really ought to be.
I remember your first show on MSNBC. And you dealt, in a large part of that show, you dealt with the subject of church-state relations.
That's right.
Was that a risk?
You know, I remember a lot of the discussion on that first show about church and state division was with Pat Buchanan,
right?
Who is my great sparring partner and my weird ideological bookend in television. And Pat didn't seem uncomfortable, because he never seems uncomfortable because he's such a confident debater. But he seemed surprised that I was doing that. He was sort of starting to caution me. You ought to stay away from this religion stuff. It's going to look bad. You attacking people on the basis of their religion. And I was saying, no, that's not what I'm doing. But I am willing to talk about religion because I believe in the division of church and state, and because it's been foisted on us. I mean, that was immediately following that test case Sunday, where the right wing legal group put up all those pastors toward making explicit endorsements from the pulpit. And I don't feel shy about the issue. I don't believe that liberals should feel shy about the issue. And I don't feel like talking about religion is insulting to religious people. But Pat was shocked about it, which I thought was kind of great.
Rachel continues to do great work. She's doing just exactly what she needs to be doing.